Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy. Welcome to another episode of the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. This time, we speak to Amy and Alex, who are speech and language therapists working in NHS Tayside.
We're grateful to them for agreeing to speak to us. It was really interesting conversation, hearing about their experiences of working with individuals with brain injury and how the last few months in the context of the COVID pandemic has brought new challenges. I'm sure many of you listening will have similar experiences. We also spoke about Words of the Week. If you're not familiar with this and want to join the mailing list, after hearing Alex and Amy speak about it, there's a link in the show notes.
As always, the episode was recorded remotely with each of us in different locations and variable internet connections. So there is, as always, some bits of distortion to the sound quality. I think Jan and I have come to realise this is the reality of podcasting remotely without the high-end equipment that I'm sure professional podcasters use. But we hope you stick with it and it doesn't hamper your enjoyment of the episode.
So without further ado, here's Helen and I with Amy and Alex.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.
Hi, this is Jan.
Hi, this is Helen.
And we have Alex and Amy here, our fellow speech and language therapists, to talk to us about themselves and the work they do. So, Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name is Alex, and I have been working within NHS Tayside for around about 4 years. I was very fortunate that my first job was where I actually come from, in Dundee, so that worked out so well for me. My first job was in working in brain injury rehab, working with adults, and it's been a job which I have loved for the full 4 years. I've started helping out within the teams. I've done a little bit of acute work and a little bit of community work as well, so it's given me a little bit of taste of everything, which has been nice.
So coming into this field as a new graduate, Alex, that is quite an achievement.
It was a bit of a shock at first. I don't think I really knew exactly what I was getting myself in for. the where we worked, you were around the same 16 patients, and at times could be quite intense, but because we were quite a small team, it worked really well, and it was definitely a job that you learn in a short space of time.
Thanks. And Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name's Amy Hanschel, and I also work in NHS Tayside. I've been working as a speech and language therapist for almost 11 years now. And similar to Alex, I started off straight as a newly qualified therapist into brain injury, and really loved it. So kind of have a specialist interest in kind of communication disorders following brain injury, and also a kind of also a special interest in AAC. So I do a lot of the kind of AAC coordination for our team as well. And I think they go quite nicely hand in hand. I really like that, kind of having both of them as kind of interests. I am not originally from Dundee, so I am from Bute, the Isle of Bute. So I'm a kind of, and studied in Glasgow, so very much came to Dundee for for the job, and I worked for about 6 or 7 years in a kind of inpatient brain injury unit with an outpatient caseload, and then went off and did a couple of other things within our service, some other jobs, and then very fortunately I was able to come back to kind of the job last year, and it's, you know, as Ali, I just love it. I really love our client group and our, you know, the work that we do. So that's kind of a wee bit about myself.
And having worked in the field for 11 years, you must have seen some changes over your time.
Yeah, I suppose kind of big changes, I suppose, in my time are kind of around technology and the changes and kind of how we use technology. When I kind of started, the iPads were just coming on to the scene as kind of therapy tools and kind of tools around communication support. So I suppose I've kind of grown up a little bit as a speech therapist with that kind of development. And now we're seeing kind of remote delivery of therapy become a much bigger thing for us. So yeah, lots of changes from, yeah, that's one point. Yeah, lots of changes.
So just with what you'd both said, I'm going to maybe spring a question on you that we've maybe not talked a lot about, but you both kind of mentioned it about being newly qualified and coming into the area of brain injury, and the potential kind of challenges of that. And I wonder, actually, you've both seen students coming after you as well and newly qualified clinicians. Do you think that newly qualified speech therapists feel confident with a brain injury caseload? Do you think that they feel comfortable with working with that client group?
I mean, I think if someone said to me that that was going to be my first job, I'm working with quite an intense client group and sometimes really heavy going cases, I don't know if I would have said I would have been able to cope with it and if it that much. But I suppose you get to experience it. It's the characters that you meet. It's all the different therapies that you get day to day. And you really learn so much patient to patient. You know, there's little patterns, but we still have people that, you know just off of a therapy that you've used with them, you're like, oh yeah, that person. And that really makes it, you know, it's the patients that really make the job, I suppose. But the love of language and everything is a big part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your passion for the job clearly comes through. And I think you're right, you know, the kind of variety of people that we work with and the variety of skills that we need to bring as clinicians, it's unlike any other caseload really that I've had experience with. What about you, Amy? What would you say are kind of are students, newly qualified clinicians, prepped for this? What are the challenges, I suppose, if this caseload leads on from that?
Yeah, I would agree with Alex there. I think you know, even with a bit of experience behind you, when you hear you've got a new admission or somebody new on your caseload, you still have that little, oh, who have I got coming, you know, like, and you know, you could have a similar presentation but a completely different personality, and it just I think it's the beauty of the job is the variety and, you know, the people that we get to work with. I think what was most important for me as a newly qualified therapist was the support of colleagues, and you know, you're very much viewed as a newly qualified therapist and then therefore kind of supported as such. So kind of lots of opportunities for joint working, observation, doing a wee bit by yourself, but being able to feedback, and then that just very gradual kind of process of becoming more autonomous in your practice. But I still use my colleagues all the time for support, you know. whether it's MD, you know, AHP colleagues or our kind of speech therapy team locally, or kind of across the country, that, you know, getting that support from others, I think, is a key throughout your career. Really important.
Yeah, I think what you said there was so accurate, because I think the day when we think that we've cracked it in terms of knowing it all or feeling that we can handle this caseload and whatever it might bring, that's quite dangerous territory to maybe get into, isn't it? And I think generally, in terms of speech therapists that I've ever worked with, I think we're always quite inquisitive people, aren't we? And we're always looking for new ways to work, and I think we like the challenges that brings. Yeah,
it's so important just to have that support and guidance in those first couple of years.
I think we, Alex and we spoke about it being kind of something kind of aspirational. If you have, you know, really solid support and kind of senior clinicians around about you, you've got something that you can kind of strive towards and kind of aspire to be. And I think we've been very fortunate in our team here that we've got kind of folks around us that we have that kind of relationship with.
And on the podcast, we do like to kind of acknowledge how hardworking speech therapists are, and sometimes we're not good at tooting our own horn. So go on, let's name check these mentors who's kind of shaped you as clinicians. What about you, Amy? Who are you thinking about when you're talking about mentors?
I think we both are thinking of our colleague who's now retired, Leorad Hunter, who was kind of instrumental, I think, in kind of shaping both our careers and the development and the kind of experience we've had so far as speech therapists. But we've also got really a kind of supportive senior team at the moment, Fiona McCauley, and some of our other kind of therapists in Tayside. Mm-hmm. Alex, I don't know if you would be the similar.
I was just going to say your name, Amy.
Oh, Alex.
No,
of course.
No, I think I agree with Amy, but, you know, that kind of informal supervision and support that Amy and I get from one another is so helpful, especially through in the past year or so.
So just thinking about the last year, particularly with the challenges that COVID has brought in terms of delivering quality care, but I suppose extending across your career, what kind of values would you say that you're bringing to ensure that the patients you're working with are getting that kind of person-centred care, delivering that kind of quality care within your service?
I suppose that one of the main values that sort of been ingrained since the very beginning is that long continued support. So we see them as inpatients when they first come to us, and delivering that style of therapy all the way through to home, and, you know, it changes therapy depending on where they are at that point of their recovery. And we have patients who prefer to go to some groups rather than one-to-one therapy, and it's really at making adaptable and flexible to that, and receptive to what they tell us. So that in itself is a really big one for me. Mm-hmm. And just trying to encourage that participation in therapy in whatever way you can.
But what would you add to that, do you think, Amy?
Yeah, I would agree. I think something that we really value, as Alex said, is that kind of how we support that kind of long-term support, kind of thinking about communication difficulties after brain injury potentially being more chronic, and as people go through life, different stages, you know, we're working with a fairly young population. Kind of return to work, all those kind of things in the longer term, with our outpatient caseload, how can we be kind of flexible? flexible in supporting that and responsive to that. And that I think that support of our outpatient caseload has been particularly challenging over the past year with, you know, our lack of face-to-face contact. And even people that we have seen very regularly for good quality therapy delivery across near me, we're getting to the stage where thinking we really need a face-to-face contact to just make that connection again and get a proper feel for where the things that we can't put our finger on what we mean, but just get a feel for how that person's doing and where they're at and where we go next. I think there is, you know, definitely as we're talking about that kind of blended approach where potentially going forward we'll continue to use a lot of near me and video appointments, but yeah, I think we cannot lose sight of this kind of face-to-face contacts and support.
So I really want to talk about words of the week, but before I do, can I just ask you girls a sort of two-pronged question, just nuts and bolts stuff, you know? I'd really like to hear about what you enjoy the most about your job, and then also what might be the most challenging thing about your job. So, Amy, what do you enjoy most and what is the most challenging?
I think the thing that I enjoy most is getting to know our patients really well. I think it's a real privilege to be involved in their life at, you know, such a difficult time and kind of be able to see them through that journey. As a therapist, not just as a speech therapist, and particularly again over the last year, I think in some ways our support of the kind of inpatient caseload has intensified with, you know, restrictions in visiting. That, you know, you really become a key person for that individual. And likewise, you know, I've seen more of my patients sometimes than I have done some of my own family, you know. So those patient relationships, I think, are really important. Challenging for me, I think, is feeling that we're able to deliver that quality service. You know, in terms of that demand and capacity, I think we all feel the stretch, and we know what is good practice and what we should be aiming for, but just being able to try and deliver that. And I suppose that comes into creativity, doesn't it, a little bit, in terms of how we have to change our practice to try and increase our capacity and to be able to deliver, as you say, that really quality good therapy that makes a difference.
And what are your thoughts, Alex? What's running through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be really annoying and echo some of what Amy said, but yeah, I mean, without a doubt, the thing that kind of gets you excited for your job every day is the patients that you work with and what you're able to do and what, you know, what sometimes you're able to do for them and their families is a massive boost for us, and a lot of the times vice versa. A lot of the stories and memories that we have from patients is really just the main part of your job, isn't it? And I think the challenge with the job sometimes is the complexity of the patients that we're getting through the door, and feeling that kind of, you know, feeling, you know, what can we do? And we've not seen this before. We've not seen this pattern before. And, you know, it's maybe not a bad challenge. It's a welcome challenge. But, yeah, it's certainly something that keeps you on your toes.
I think, yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying, I think. But that maybe comes from that drive to do the best for your patient. And if you're feeling this is really complicated, how am I going to do the best by this person? That's I think where a lot of us kind of come from. So I wouldn't worry about feeling that you're kind of echoing Amy's sentiments, because what when you were speaking, Amy, I was thinking exactly the same things. Yeah.
Alex and Amy, I'm so impressed with the resource that you and your team are providing to everybody in the community, and that being national. I don't know if you have any international subscribers. Words of the Week, I'd really love to hear about its history and, you know, how you guys managed to keep that going. Amy, tell me the story of Words of the Week.
Well, we started back in 2014, and it came off the back of us having a little cohort of patients who all had a self-identified goal of wanting to work on proper nouns, proper names, that had been identified as a problem. I think it's quite a recognised issue with people who have aphasia. And what we had found was we were struggling to meet that kind of need in an efficient way, you know, without coming up with individual therapy programmes for each individual. We wanted to create something that was current and relevant and was able to meet that need, that kind of quantity and quality and sufficiency argument. And so the kind of initial sets were created, and the idea came from, we mentioned her before, our colleague Leora Hunter. And yeah, so it kind of grew from there, and we found it really useful in our own practice. At that time, we had just had in our department, we had agreed to have an admin apprentice from the local college, and we were racking our brains as what to do with her. So she really allowed us to get into that routine of, she helped us create the initial PowerPoints. And so that gave us the boost to get started. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. We were presented at BAS, and we got a small cohort of, you know, people that wanted to, you know, have access to the resource. So we kind of shared it with them, and then we did an article for the bulletin, the RCSLT bulletin, and then we presented it at conference. And just each kind of iteration of that, we just increased our subscribers, and I think there's something there, kind of just the consistency and having it in our routine of practice. It's just become something that we do, embedded in our practice. But Alex has been much more involved in the kind of development and that kind of massive jump we had in subscribers, and kind of how we kind of met that need.
Tell us about that, Alex.
Yeah, when I started, there were, I think, about 700 subscribers to the Words of the Week, and we were doing this sort of via our NHS Mail. So NHS Mail Max was 100 people, 7 different lists that we would send out on a Friday. And as Amy said, it was just, that was the routine, you know, as soon as I started my job, that's the routine that we do on a Friday. So it was ingrained. And it got to the stage that we were getting regular sign-ups every week, and it was taking up more and more of our morning. So sort of liaised with our IT communication team, and they suggest MailChimp, which is a free system that sends out sort of bulk emails. I think now that we use it, I see it a lot in all the emails that I get. And it's a way of us being able to kind of set up an email on the Thursday, and everybody who's signed up is there. And on the Friday, we can press send. And it does take a bit of that time off. I think now, when we look just before our chat today, we had about 1,400 subscribers on our list. So it's really, you know, this in itself has really made us look back on it and realise how far we've come. It is amazing, and it's great that we're still able to provide it for everybody.
I take my hat off to you. I really, really do. I know the effort that goes into something like that. And I'm just so impressed. We use it every week in our service. I have emailed it to families, you know, and to other speech and language therapists around the country. So thank you so much from behalf of everybody for your efforts. It is a sensational resource. Now, if people, you might get some more subscribers. If people want to find out about Words of the Week, what do they do?
So we have an NHS Tayside speech and language therapist adult acquired. It's a very long title, but we have a website, a departmental website, that they can go onto, and it will give them some information about Words of the Week, and it will also give them the opportunity to get the email straight to their mailbox every Friday. I think there's also an email address within that where they can contact Amy and I, just to ask if they want more information about the resource. I think that's something that we've sort of tried to keep up, is that response time with our Words of the Week community, I suppose. It feels like a community now, definitely.
We get a lot of feedback from our subscribers, and especially over the past year, it's been nice to be in contact with therapists from across the country, from, you know, down south in Devon to right up, you know, north, and people get in contact and tell us how they use it, and it's so interesting, just that kind of informal networking opportunity. It's been really lovely.
And, you know, it just shows how you are contributing to the wider community, not just for people with brain injuries, but, you know, for people with all sorts of support needs. So, yeah, take my hat off to you. So, Helen, can we include links and things? That's a bit that I need your help with, just including links.
Yep, we'll put a link to the that NHS Tayside site that you've mentioned. We'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can find it there. Yep. So kind of circling back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago when you both spoke about the challenges of the last year in particular with COVID, I certainly seen with some of my caseload kind of an impact in terms of someone's almost communication confidence, because they're not getting the same opportunities to maybe speak to as wide a range of people, for example. I wonder if, say, Amy, could you speak a bit about any kind of changes that you've noticed within your caseload?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Helen, about that kind of communication confidence, both with kind of fairly new patients being discharged into the community and us picking them up and not having that immediate opportunity to socialise with more than, you know, immediate family. And we're now seeing kind of the detrimental effects of that in some of the work we're picking up. And also with our long term, you know, people that have been maybe on our caseloads a wee bit longer or who have come back to us. Again, it's a communication confidence thing rather than a change in impairment. We've got fantastic support up in Tayside from Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland. They've run a really great and valuable service throughout the past year. They've upped their kind of virtual support and telephone support. But as we've said before, it's limited kind of face-to-face, and kind of with our kind of speakability groups and our headway groups and all these things that you would just be automatically kind of signposting people into, they've been really limited. And I think we still have, you know, as much as video calling and that kind of contact has been fantastic, there is still a cohort of patients that are inaccessible. Whether they don't have the technology, they don't have the support to access. And I think, you know, over the next year, as we are less restricted in who we can see, these are going to be the people that are going to have more problems, are going to bounce back to us.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've seen people myself who've maybe even had their brain injury quite some time ago, but just with maybe not having that same kind of opportunity to go out or difficulties with maintaining things like social distancing, even and understanding kind of all the new social rules that we have to follow, landing themselves in hot water and then losing a lot of their own self-confidence and being able to go out. And yeah, I think it will be interesting to see what happens over the coming months, probably with the clients that we're seeing and how they've coped over the last year. Would there be anything you would want to add to that, Alex?
I suppose, just again, yeah, with the lack of opportunities, a lot of our patients really do well with that functional practice, those day-to-day activities of going to Tesco's or, getting a coffee or getting on the bus. A lot of that's been taken away for quite a lot of our patients, and it's now all over the phone or, on an iPad. And it just is really, really difficult for quite a few of our patients. And yeah, it's just hopefully things start to change now for them.
So I've actually been quite amazed as well at how people have adjusted as well. And sometimes the people I work with are the people that are making us keep the rules, you know. So we're, you know, I mean, we have to wear a mask all the time, but it's all social distancing, 2 meters, you know. So they, you know, have adjusted well in some ways, but I think the lack of fat for people, because we are impatient, the lack of family contact for such a long period of time, people not being able to go on home passes. We've had difficulties with discharging people because we haven't been able to do the transition to home, and things have all been delayed, and it's just, you know, been really challenging.
So yeah, we've used the word challenging quite a lot in lots of different contexts through our chat, but I think anyone working with this kind of caseload, we've acknowledged the challenges that that can bring, and again, this last year has brought lots of additional challenges. So, as individuals, as a team, how are you guys kind of ensuring that you're looking after yourself and kind of maintaining a sense of well-being and resilience, both kind of, I suppose, individually, but I guess as a service, as a team?
I think that kind of just regular contact and checking in has been really valued. Even, you know, if it's somebody popping their head around the door just really quickly, everything okay this morning? Yeah, check in. As much as we, you know, it's mixed feelings about our old face-to-face meetings, isn't it? Our team meetings that we used to dread, and you know, we kind of miss the socials around them. Having access to things like Microsoft Teams and Zoom to just check in with other colleagues, particularly when we're not on site, or you know, for example, Alex has been doing a lot of work in the community, so was maybe a bit more isolated. And just keeping those social contacts with colleagues, I think, is really important.
What's helped you, Alex?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of lockdown, our speech therapy team set up a little WhatsApp group, and it was purely meant for just people want to check in and or share something that they've managed to do at the weekend, like go for a walk or yeah, be with the dog. And it was those little things that just reminded you of that sort of support that is there should you need it. And I think kind of, working in that inpatient, working with a team where you're right next door to then going to be in the community, you've got to take the time to phone someone and just remind yourself that there is that team there. And I think we are quite good at just checking in, and it doesn't always have to be a big supervision formal chat.
So
But
being
yeah, just
quite proactive to get your support
Yeah, definitely.
Are we ready
Alex
for the...
Say
that again, Amy.
I was going to say, Alex and I have also developed very high tastes in coffee. We've become a kind of pair of coffee snobs over the past year, so that's been our thing.
No more Tesco coffee, eh?
No.
Oh, no. Cartier only.
At the end of our podcast, girls, we always try to ask our people, you know, what would be their take-home message for our listeners. So just have a think about some of the things that you've talked about. What's the most important thing you've shared tonight, or something new that you would like our listeners to hear? Who would, Amy, would you like to go first on that?
Yeah, I think something that we've kind of just looking back in preparation for our conversation today, just looking back over kind of the words of the week and its development is that sharing, an opportunity for sharing informally. You know, it's words of the week is really simple in its idea, and it's you know, it's not, you know, something that's really fancy. And I think just I think it's taught us to be a little bit braver in kind of opening ourselves up, making yourself a little bit vulnerable to kind of feedback and that kind of thing. But I think from the feedback we've received from kind of the subscribers that we have had is that sharing has kind of been valued, and you do wonder if there's kind of opportunity to share kind of more. You know, we're all using resources, particularly now via video calls. Things are more, digitally based. Is there an opportunity for us just to be more open to sharing across the board? I suppose that would be my kind of take-home message, just kind of the sharing of practice and sharing of experience and resources.
And you coming on to this podcast is yet another example of your willingness to share.
And bravery.
And bravery.
That's it, Alex. So, Alex, what would you like us to hear?
I suppose the sort of what sticks in my mind is all about being okay with little mistakes here and there. And that the little mistakes that we've made throughout the years have actually turned into something really great and has allowed us to be a bit more open for change and ways to improve. So I think, you know, it's something that I try to remind myself and wish I'd maybe known a bit more starting off, that little mistakes are good and that's the way you learn.
I just totally agree with you, Alex. I have this saying that I have in my own head that, you know, you fail your way to success.
Yeah, so, I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And the podcast is all about the learning journey that we're all on.
Thank you both for coming on and speaking with us and sharing your ideas, your thoughts, your experiences. You're both doing amazing work, particularly in quite challenging circumstances over the last few months. So, yes, a little round of applause to you, and well done for coming on and onto our podcast and speaking with us. And thank you so much. And maybe we'll have you on again at some point in the future.
Yeah,
well,
thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
It's been actually really good fun, and not as nearly as scary as what we both thought.
Thanks for listening to our podcast and persevering with any distortions in the recording. We do hope we were able to minimise them somewhat for you through editing.
Yes, we do appreciate our listeners as well as our guests working with our technology challenges. Here's that word again, challenges. Anyway, if you have any comments, questions or suggestions, or if you yourself would like to come on our podcast, then please do get in touch. So for now, goodbye.
Bye, everybody.